A detour is not a dead end. Resilience to pursue the long road of spiritual achievement. We all know life is a journey. Avodas Hashem is a journey, and resilience is necessary. When one understands this, they are not thrown by setbacks, by the inevitabilities of things not working out as planned, and even spiritual failures. This is the way it goes in this world. And we keep our eye on the destination, on the goal, and we triumph challenges and failures. I posit that this message of hope is the grand design of Parshas Bahar, the laws of Shemitah and Yovel. And you are justifiably surprised to hear me say that. What does Shemitah and Yovel, leaving the land fallow in the seventh year, counting to the 50th year of Jubilee, what in the world does this have to do with hope to triumph the vicissitudes of life? How are we going to pull this off? How are we going to pull this rabbit out of the hat? But the parsha will work its magic for us. Let's take a step back. And let's kind of get a panoramic sense, a feeling for how the biblical story, the story of Jewish history and Torah has developed all the way since Har Sinai up to Parshas Bahar. So initially, at Har Sinai and Parshas Yisro, Hashem presented the Aseres Hadibros, the Ten Commandments. This is the very foundation of Judaism. And then in Parshas Mishpatim, which followed, he laid out all sorts of detailed laws. It is quite clear that the details of Parshas Mishpatim are actually foundational to Matan Torah, given as part of the covenant of Torah itself. And then the horizon turns dark. The Jewish people sin with the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, that dreadful sin described as the Jewish people's betrayal. As the sages term it, brazen is the bride who commits infidelity right under the chuppah. Brazen is the Jewish people who were disloyal to Hashem at Sinai at the chuppah. The luchos are broken, and all of Torah, Parshas Yisro, and Mishpatim seems to be gone. However, there is then a teshuva, the first Yom Kippur story. Hashem takes us back, gives us second luchos containing the Ten Commandments. And at the end of Parshas Kisisa, he reiterates many of the Mishpatim laws. As Ramban explains, the second luchos is a full redo, a full second giving of Torah, a remarriage, you might call it. And therefore, he is not only giving the Ten Commandments, but re-giving many of the Mishpatim laws he had presented previously to show we're really redoing this thing. We're starting this from a back to the drawing board, a fresh slate. We're going to try this one again. The story then continues at the end of Shmos with the building of the Mishkan. Hashem Shekhinah comes back to us in the Mishkan, further showing the message of reconciliation. And with this in mind, explains Ramban, Sefer Vayikra continues with the Mishkan, the laws of the Karbanos, and really a new station, a new locus of meeting where Hashem meets up with Moshe. Unlike previously, where Hashem revealed himself at Har Sinai, once the Mishkan has been built here in Sefer Vayikra, Hashem meets with Moshe in the Mishkan. Vayikra el Moshe vayedaber elav me'ol moed. Sefer Vayikra begins, he called Moshe, and he spoke to him in the Ohel Moed, which literally means the tent of meeting. The Mishkan becomes the new tent of meeting. So Sefer Vayikra seems to have moved on from Har Sinai. Now we have a Mishkan. Hashem is revealing to himself to Moshe in the Mishkan because the Matan Torah has been redone and we've been able to move on. Or so it seems. But now, ironically, comes along our Parsha of Bahar, the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, and begins, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lamar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, presenting these laws of Shemitah at Har Sinai. Notice the backwards shift as though retreating from Mishkan, the new meeting place, and returning to the prior location and the prior setting, pre-Mishkan, i.e. Har Sinai. This is a textual anomaly noted by Ramban. And we will see, this is actually a very big deal. Ramban explains that indeed there was unfinished business. The regiving of Torah after the Egel and Parshas Kisisa, when Hashem regave not only the Ten Commandments, but many of the mitzvahs of Mishpatim to show he's redoing this thing, this Torah, had left, something had been left out. Because one of the major laws in Parshas Mishpatim was actually the laws of Shemitah. Two psukim in Parshas Mishpatim tell us, V'sheish shanam tizra esartzecha, v'hashviyas tishmatana. There's something called Shemitah. Work the land for 6 years and leave it fallow on the seventh. So actually, the re-giving of Torah after Egel, the reiteration in Parshas Kisisa, ought to repeat this law as well. Shemitah ought to be re-given in the second Torah after the Egel, just as it was given the first time around in Parshas Mishpatim. But it's not. You will not find Shemitah in Parshas Kisisa. Hence comes along our parsha to complete the cycle of the re-giving of Torah, to complete the redo, the pressing the redo button, and tells us there's a final Mishpatim law, a final Matan Torah law, which had to be re-given to mark the complete re-giving of Torah, the complete Torah of Tshuva, you might say. And hence, our parsha, with its extensive laws of Shemitah, says the Ramban, is actually completing the second Matan Torah of Har Sinai. And therefore, it speaks of Hashem speaking to Moshe here at Har Sinai, actually recording the earlier conversation at Har Sinai pre-Mishkan. Our parsha is no longer a Mishkan focus, but is actually cycling back to complete the bris, to complete the covenant of a second giving of Torah by reiterating this final mitzvah Shemitah, which was presented the first time around, but not the second time around with the second tablets. And Ramban explains from this perspective not only Parshas Bahar, but Parshas Bechukosai as well. Parshas Bechukosai, the parsha which follows, contains blessings and curses, brachas and klalas. Now, blessings and curses always serve the purpose, we see in the text, of showing the completion of a covenant. At the end of all covenants in Torah, there are blessings and curses, i.e. consequences. If you keep all the laws of the covenant, you will be blessed. If, God forbid, you violate them, then the alternative. So explains the Ramban, these blessings and curses of Parshas Bechukosai are actually the culmination of the second Luchos, the second giving of Torah post-Egel, which had just been completed in Parshas Bahar with the laws of Shemitah and Yovel. So hence it's appropriate to say now that the second Torah, the Torah of Tshuva, is complete. The Torah of Redo, of remarriage, is complete. And the text in Parshas Bechukosai therefore concludes the blessings and the curses with the powerful pasuk, Eila hachukim v'amishpatim v'hatorus asher nashan Hashem beino v'im b'nei Yisrael b'har Sinai. These are the laws of Har Sinai, because in fact, Parshios Bahar and Bechukosai completes all the laws of Har Sinai, the second giving of Torah after the Egel. So here we have Ramban elevating Parshios Bahar and Bechukosai to whole new heights. This parsha is not just dealing with a particular mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah and Yovel here is the culmination of the second Matan Torah. It is the final law being repeated now that the Jewish people are re-cementing their bond with Hashem after the Tshuva, after Egel. It is, so to speak, the grand finale of the Matan Torah symphony. It's a climax point, and it ought to be seen that way. I am convinced that if Shemitah is the culmination note, the crescendo note of the second tablets, of the second giving of Torah, then somehow Shemitah and Yovel is capturing what a second Matan Torah is all about, what a Torah of Tshuva is all about, what a coming back together after our infidelity with Hashem, what a remarriage or re-cementing of a relationship after our first fight is all about. Can't be a coincidence that Shemitah and Yovel serves as the crescendo note of this second Torah, the Torah of Reconciliation. Moreover, Shemitah and Yovel in Parshas Bahar is not only the grand finale of this second Torah, the Torah of Tshuva, the redo, but it stands out in this regard, because you will notice that back in Parshas Mishpatim, the first time around, the first Matan Torah, Shemitah and Yovel, we noted, only occupies two psukim. Shemitah and Yovel is a detail amongst many in the first Matan Torah. But now, to complete the second Matan Torah, now when the Jewish people are re-wedding Hashem, Shemitah and Yovel appear as if on steroids in a whole parsha with new presence. Why so? Apparently, Shemitah and Yovel take on new meaning after the Chet HaEgel. Apparently, Shemitah and Yovel somehow capture the secret of Tshuva, the secret of every heart restored, the secret of overcoming the hurdles and spiritual challenges and failings. This is the exciting promise which our parsha is dangling in front of us, a whole new understanding of Shemitah and Yovel, that beyond the general messages we've heard from our childhood, such as Shemitah and Yovel is a lesson of Emunah, when the farmer lays down his tractor and his plow and relies on Hashem and doesn't earn his parnasa. So that's all true. But there's so much more than that. Our parsha is insinuating to us, seen this way, that Shemitah and Yovel captures the hope of reconciliation, of Tshuva. How so? The key is to tap into a whole new understanding of Shemitah and Yovel, which will be a game changer not only in terms of how we see Shemitah and Yovel, but really all mitzvahs observed in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael. In a Kabbalistic passage in our parsha, Ramban explains as follows. It seems odd, the whole notion of Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah is called a Shabbos, Shabbos Lashem. And the head almost feels a headache. There's a disconnect here. Shabbos is working 6 days and resting on the seventh. I mean, that's how Hashem created the world. How has Shemitah morphed into years, 6 years and a seventh year in Eretz Yisrael? And why is it a rest of the land? I understand that we're weekly, 6 days we work, we rest on the seventh day. We human beings, we Jewish people are imitating Hashem. But what does it mean that there's a Shabbos observed by the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael? What is this all about? Explains Ramban, there is a much grander Shabbos than the Shabbos of the 6 days and resting on the seventh. There is a Shabbos which spans the millennia. And that is the Shabbos of Olam Haba. Because as the world to come. Because as the sages say, existence as we know it will exist for 6,000 years. Six millennia. And then in the seventh millennia, there will be a Shabbos of sorts leading into the world of Olam Haba, which will follow. And Ramban and other Kabbalists develop for us how each millennia of world history mirrors one of the 6 days of the creation of the world. This is quite exciting and all sorts of, it's brimming with promise and creative discovery to see history and where we fit into history in terms of this greater cosmic Shabbos of not only the rest and bliss that a world was created during the first week of creation, but here a rest and a bliss that the world has reached its purpose finally when there's Olam Haba at the end of this great story. So explains Ramban, when Shemitah takes the concept of 6 days of work and a seventh day of rest and expands it to years, that is symbolizing a more expansive Shabbos. The Shabbos of Olam Haba, which expands beyond 6 days, ultimately becoming 6 millennia and the 7th millennia, Olam Haba. None of us live for 7 millennia, so we do the best we can. We mark the process by expanding beyond 7 days to 7 years. And in the 7th year, we want to feel some sense of Olam Haba, or at least Me'en Olam Haba, resting with a sense of we have confidence the world is going to make it to its purpose. The Jewish people are going to bask, radiate in that eternal bliss. And that's what Shemitah is all about. Because the Ramban explains, Eretz Yisrael, the Holy Land, is the earthly manifestation of Olam Haba. Olam Haba is called by the Chazal, by the sages, Eretz HaChayim, the land of the living, the space of the living. Just as there is a holy land or holy space in the spiritual world, there is a corresponding holy land, spiritual space in the physical world. And that is Eretz Yisrael. Whole new understanding of Eretz Yisrael. All the longings for Eretz Yisrael, the love of Eretz Yisrael, which the Yiddish neshama, the Jewish neshama feels in a meta-rational way, beyond what we can understand, explains the Ramban, there's a sense that Eretz Yisrael is truly the Gan Eden, is truly an Eden of sorts. It is Olam Haba in its, the greatest time we could have in Olam Haba. Eretz HaChayim is in this holy land, Eretz Yisrael, it's the earthly manifestation. And therefore, when we observe the Shemitah cycle, which is affirming our belief in Olam Haba, the 6th millennia followed by the 7th, the land of Eretz Yisrael is permeated with bliss, with rest. Because this is the land which symbolizes Olam Haba. This is how the Ramban understands the Shemitah cycle, as affirming not only the original Shabbos of creation, but the ultimate Shabbos of Olam Haba, the powerful message that life has meaning, life has a purpose, life is going somewhere. There's a bliss at the end called Olam Haba. And every day of our lives, individually and nationally, we are pushing towards that end. We are working towards that end. Just as each day of a week, we are building and working towards Shabbos. Each day in our lives, and each of the 1,000 years, is working towards Olam Haba. We express this powerful belief through the Shemitah cycle, explains the Ramban. Now this Ramban is so delicious in its revelation of a new understanding of Shemitah, a new understanding of Eretz Yisrael as this virtual Gan Eden, and why the Jewish heart, as we said, has this sentimental soul, meta-rational connection to Eretz Yisrael. But on a deeper level, the Ramban really holds the key to answer our original question. Why Shemitah and Yovel in our Parsha assume such prominence in the remarriage, in the second Luchos story, that now Shemitah and Yovel becomes the crescendo note of the second Bris. But because a Jewish people after Chet HaEgel is distraught, we blew it. Let's bring this down to earthly terms. The couple was married, and then they had their first fight. The inevitability has transpired. Ooh. Yeah? And if you think the couple who, with all their blissful dreams, when that first fight happens, how in the young minds, suddenly it seems like all Gehenna is breaking loose here. And the notion, the promise that we could redo this thing with Hashem after this first fight. That utopia is not realized right away. Bliss is not realized right away. But we reach there. It might be a long haul process, Olam Haba, after 6,000 years, but we're going to get there. It's just going to take some patience. Just as humanity will reach its Eden, will reach its Olam Haba, if it only holds on tight through 6,000 years in the seventh, as Shemitah is affirming. We, the Jewish people, internalize. Despite Egel's, right, as we face the broken dishes and the noise after this first fight, the Egel, we're going to make it to the utopia. We're going to make it, as Rei Mahuvim with Hashem, to this bliss. We're going to get there. These setbacks have a context. They're part of a larger, long road of 6,000 years to reach Olam Haba, so hold on tight. That would be my suggestion now, how Shemitah and Yovel assume such prominence here as really the climax of the remarriage after Chet HaEgel. Very helpful when we face disappointments in life, failures in life, which so engulf us. We're kind of besieged by the immediate disappointment. When you take a step back and you realize there's a big picture. Utopia does not exist. Rome was not built in one day, and certainly Olam Haba is not built in one day. It's going to take time to reach the bliss. But we're engaged here. We're invested in this process. That's what Shemitah Yovel, that's what all the millennia of creation, Hashem is not throwing in the towel. That's what it's all about. Beautiful new appreciation. And as with every new appreciation, the deeper we dig, the more the clues surface. As we dig deeper into understanding Shemitah and Yovel and the seven millennia process, cosmic process towards Olam Haba, which it symbolizes, I am convinced we will see further indicators that this process is really all about tshuva, all about overcoming Egels and other sorts of major sins and failures. To begin, the Medrash teaches us that there was actually a plan A, which was very different. Plan A was, if Adam and Chava would not have sinned on that first Friday with the Eitz Hadas, that first Shabbos would have been Olam Haba Yom Shekulu Shabbos Amnucha. You think it's the 10th hour of that first Friday. It's a stressful time. Fridays as Shabbos looms on the horizon is always stressful. And it was no less stressful that first time around. The first couple blew it badly. Not the first couple to lose themselves in a pre-Shabbos stress. They didn't only lose their Shalom Pious. They lost Olam Haba. They were on the verge of Olam Haba. That first Shabbos would not have been simply Me'en Olam Haba, the Medrash says, but would have been Shabbos, Olam Haba itself. And it seems like it's all over. But then continues the Medrash, Hashem says, I'm not ready to give up on this thing. No, the world did not reach Olam Haba in the first Shabbos. We're going to do this over. We're going to have a larger Shabbos system, seven millennia. That the seven millennia actually become the new form of Shabbos, the new form of Olam Haba. Hashem never gives up on dreams, and we ought never give up on dreams. The process simply changes. That yes, setbacks and failures complicate things. They prolong things. But we're going to get there. Hashem has his contingency plan. New form of Shabbos. It's a detour. But it's not a dead end. We're going to get there. With this Medrash in mind, it becomes so apparent now how the seven millennia towards Olam Haba as represented by Shemitah is all about hope, amidst chet, contingencies, amidst seeming lost opportunities. The promise now becomes very resonant to the Jewish people as they put themselves back together after the ego. It's painful, all the setbacks. And the process, the circuitous process now to reach our goal. But Hashem is a system. Hashem is a system called tshuva and a system called the millennia as represented by Shemitah. That Shabbos is reached. Pursue the long haul. Pursue the detour. And I think of this all the time when I cluck my tongue when I am on a detour such as road work. It's a detour. It's not a dead end. It's like that in the spiritual world too. The original plan of the week of Shabbos now becomes seven millennia, but we get there. This is the power of the Shemitah message and the hope which is elicited to a Jewish people amidst despair. And the pattern continues. As we dig deeper into our parasha, beyond Shemitah, and now we turn to Yovel, the Jubilee year, we see the cohesive tapestry beginning to take shape. All sorts of other strands of tshuva just weave their way in. Because the 50th Jubilee year, what happens? Not only are fields left fallow as in the previous Shemitah years, but in the Jubilee year, two special things happen. Number one, all Jewish slaves are let free. Number two, all familial estates in the land of Israel return to their rightful owner, meaning each Jewish family received a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael, which becomes theirs for eternity, theirs to be passed down an inheritance, which represents their stake in the Holy Land. But sometimes an impoverished Jewish family must painfully sell away their familial estate in Israel. When the Jubilee year comes, they receive their land back. Well, listen to how the Torah describes the Jubilee year as a time of slaves returning home to their families and familial estates in Israel going back to their rightful owner. Vishavtem ishalach huzaso v'ishal mishpachto tashuvu. Each man returns to his family. Each slave returns to his family. And each individual, teshuvu, recovers his estate. The word shav, return, appears twice. Vishavtem ishal achuzaso, v'ishal mishpachto teshuvu. Return, shav. What does that evoke? Teshuvah. That I would suggest when the slaves go home, when the familial estates are returned to their rightful owner, there is a sense of everything is going back to its source. Not only fields, not only slaves, but the Jewish people are shav, returning to their source, Hashem. And the clues only begin to compound from here. The tshuva clues in the story of Yovel. For example, the Torah tells us that what do we do in the year of Yovel? How do we announce the Jubilee year? We blow a shofar. Vehivarta shofar tshuva. The shofar has clear Rosh Hashanah tshuva connotations. In fact, the Gemara compares the shofar of the Jubilee year to the shofar in Rosh Hashanah and thereby derives halachos. And when is the Jubilee announced through a shofar. Continues the Pasuk, Bachodesh Hashvi Be'aser Lachodesh B'Yom HaKippurim. The Jubilee year is proclaimed on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur heralds the Jubilee year. Why? Now it's so apparent. The Jubilee year is all about Teshuvah and Yom Kippur type of messages. Everyone's returning home. Slaves are returning to their families. Families are recovering their real estate. It's a time of shav in the Torah's words. Everyone is returning to their source. This process of Shemitah and Yovel is all about returning to our source despite detours, despite deviations. And let's bring this more to life. I want to appreciate how in a dynamic, vibrant way, a Jewish people living with these laws of Shemitah and Yovel sees the hope of returning, the hope of recovering their spiritual heritage, which perhaps they feel they have abdicated, they've lost, all taking shape. Let's begin with the slaves. The slaves who go home the Jubilee year. What must a Jewish slave feel like? A slave. Could you think of a more demeaning state of affairs? But moreover, could you think of a state of affairs that is more uncharacteristically Jewish than being a serf or a slave? Yetzias Mitzrayim, the experience of freedom, is most formative to who we are. And here a Jew has become a slave again, abdicating the privilege of Torah of Cheres. And all the more so on a spiritual level, the sages tell us that one cannot be an Eved HaHashem if they're a slave to a human being. The ear heard at Har Sinai, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim v'lo avadim l'avadim. The ear heard at Har Sinai, you're my avadim, you're not avadim to any other man. To become a slave is to abdicate the promise of Har Sinai. If I may be so bold, I'm going to suggest when a Jew sells himself into slavery, he is abdicating the privilege of Judaism. Listen to this provocative halacha about a slave, which brings out that truth. The law is that the slave master is allowed to force the Jewish slave to have relations with a shifcha kananis, with a non-Jewish maidservant. The thought which is anathema for a Jew to have relations with a non-Jewish maidservant, but the Jewish slave has been demoted to this level. The provocation cannot be more in our face. Yes, as a slave, that's what he's been reduced to. So this Jewish slave would represent an individual who has seemed to have lost all Jewish connection. But yet, the law of Yovel of the Jubilee year says the time will come when this slave must be set free to rejoin his family and re-embrace his Judaism. Because Shemitah and Yovel is all about hope. From the Ramban's perspective, we've been developing all about the promise of Olam Haba, that sooner or later as a world we're going to get to that blissful state. It just takes time. No Jew has ever severed his or her umbilical cord to their true source, to their true womb, to their true heritage. This is what Yovel, the return of the Eved Ivri, becomes so vibrantly apparent here. And I would like to think when the Jubilee year comes and the slave is returning home, when he leaves that non-Jewish maid who he's been living with, I would like to think that at most he says goodbye, but I would like to think he does not kiss her goodbye. I would like to believe he says, I am returning to my Jewish wife, and I am returning to my Jewish life. Yovel is all about we return to our source. Hope. It just takes time. This message of returning home is no less apparent in the second law of Yovel, the return of familial estates. As we explained, every family has their portion of land in the land of Israel, passed down through inheritance through the generations. But unfortunately, due to perhaps poverty or other circumstances, a family had to sell away their land in the land of Israel. Yovel says they will recover their land. This too represents a reassuming of their stake in Judaism. Each family's stake in Eretz Yisrael means a lot. This is their tradition. This is their portion within the holy land and within the holy faith. And Torah and Judaism is, of course, all about tradition. So the inheritance of that tract of land recovered at the Yovel is all about, even if we've lost our portion in the holy land, in the holy faith, seemingly, sometimes we take a step down from that privilege, we get it back. So I would suggest. And this perspective assumes particular poignance when we return to Ramban's Kabbalistic understanding that the Holy Land symbolizes Olam Haba. It is a holy space in this world, which affirms in our consciousness a holy space in the other world, Olam Haba. Because seen this way, a Jewish family's stake in Eretz Yisrael would symbolize each individual's stake in Olam Haba. And when a family so tragically must sell away their portion in the Holy Land, now there is this added, eerie dimension. Might this symbolize that we have lost our portion in the world to come? But Yovel, when all fields return, the mitzvah affirms no. Just as any loss of real estate in Eretz Yisrael is only temporal, any loss of Olam Haba, of a Jew's eternity, is only temporary. As great Kabbalists such as Ramchal and Ramami Pano teach, almost all Jews are going to make it at the end. Some it's going to take some time, and perhaps reincarnations and the like, and who knows how Hashem pulls it off. But there is a faith that we all make it. We continue to push ahead. This is what the Jubilee year is all about. Hashem does not give up, certainly not as quickly as we would give up on ourselves. So I would posit, a radical theory like this ought to be spelled out somewhere in the text. Some clear textual source that the portion of each family in Eretz Yisrael which is returned at Yovel represents our portion in Olam Haba and the hope that we will all make it at the end if we are only patient. And we need not look far. It's a Mishnah which we all know. Many of us have been saying in Pirkei Avos these weeks. It's actually a Mishnah rooted in Maseches Sanhedrin. Study it carefully. Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelak l'olam haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come. Now pay careful attention to the continuation of this Mishnah. Shenemar, V'yamech kulam tzadikim. Your nation are all righteous. Every Jew is on some level righteous. Some it's more apparent, some you have to dig deeper, blow a lot of muck to find that core, that neshama of righteousness. But it's there. Le'olam yirshu aretz. Each Jew will inherit the land. The Mishnah seems to be interpreting Yerushas Ha'aretz, inheriting the land, as a reference to inheriting Olam Haba, and hence it derives Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelk Olam Haba. Here we have the Mishnah's guarantee that each Jew has a portion in the world to come. attached to the notion of inheriting the land, which unmistakably conjures up the image of inheriting the land Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the physical tract of land which each family received and inherited, as the Torah tells us in Parshas Pinchas. So the correlation has been so clearly stated in the golden language of the Mishnah when we see it. Olam Haba is described as inheriting the land, echoing all our associations with inheriting the physical land of Eretz Yisrael, and inviting us to take all associations we have with the physical Yerusha Saharetz, the physical inheritance of the land, and apply them to Eretz Yisrael. Such as in our study, when the Jewish family who lost their portion in the land of Israel sold it away and seems to have walked away from their Jewish heritage. Yovel guarantees you're going to get it back eventually. Not only Yirshu Aretz, your inheritance, the land in this world, but Yirshu Aretz, your inheritance, the land up there. Shemitah and Yovel is all about. We may be down, but we are never out. So here we have the entire rhythm, an entire rhythm becoming audible in the Shemitah and Yovel story. All about detours ought not be seen as dead ends. Yes, setbacks make the process more complicated, and it's too bad sometimes that there are setbacks. So mourn the loss, but then push ahead. Because there's a long road here towards Olam Haba, towards purpose, towards meaning, towards the goal. Hashem did not give up on his Shabbos of Olam Haba when man blew it the first time around. He just expanded the Shabbos into 7 millennia from 7 days. So if he can expand 7 days into 7 millennia, I can certainly take my disappointments in life when projects become longer than expected and continue to push forward. And so I suggest is the poignancy of Shemitah and Yovel here, introduced as the grand finale of the second Luchos, the Luchos of Tshuva, telling the Jewish people after Egel, our first fight with our suitor Hashem. Okay, it's going to take some time till you have bliss. Sometimes it seems like we never quite get there, but we will. Push at it. This is the story of life. But there is one final dimension to make this presentation complete. When we find ourselves mourning loss, spiritual disappointment, we blew it. Yes, we take solace in the knowledge we'll get there. It's just a detour. But the question becomes, can we accelerate the process? Now that the 7 days has become 7,000 years, so to speak, and appreciate all the metaphors therein, can we impact the process? Can you have an individual who actually picks themselves up after a bad fall, dusts themselves off, and as not a victim to circumstance, they actually pursue a new route forward, a new route forward? And certainly the answer is yes. Regarding the end of days and Mashiach, the Chazal say exactly that, that it's going to happen sooner or later. That's our promise. But Hashem says, we could push forward and unmerit it. And if we do tshuva, Ein Yisrael Negolim Ela B'Shvil HaTshuva, if we do tshuva, if we are inspired, we can affect this process. After a failure, one can have the internal inspiration to pick themselves up and do great things. And sometimes one can find inspiration from another person, a teacher, a Rebbe, a mentor, who helps one along in the tshuva process. This too, to complete tonight's presentation, we will find symbolized within our story of Shemitah and Yovel. Not only does Hashem say you're going to get there, but he actually gives us an opportunity and a promise that if we do great things, we can actually accelerate the process. Because while it is true that when a Jewish family sells away their estate, it will come back after 50 years, the Jubilee year, there is another alternative. The Torah tells us that the family who sold away their estate can at any point go and buy their estate back. And the person who acquired their property in the land of Israel must give it back. Because the Torah wants to give opportunities to a Jewish family to recover their property in Israel. And not only that, it says, if the impoverished family who sold away their estate does not have the means to buy their estate themselves, their next of kin, their karuv, their relative can come into the picture and say, we're going to buy back the field for you. Now, more than simply a law, in the context of tonight's presentation, when we've breathed new meaning into this whole dynamic of a Jewish family giving up their estate in the land of Israel, how this is really a question of can an individual who has given up their stake in their tradition, given up their stake, and the question of recovering it. I would suggest the message is, we don't have to linger around till Yovel. We can be proactive. When we've lost our Eretz Yisrael, our Olam Haba, our dreams, yes, a righteous God, a merciful God promises it will come back. But we don't have to wait. We could pursue it ourselves with tshuva. And sometimes we need some help in this regard. It's hard to do tshuva proactively. But we could find inspiration with our next of kin, an individual, whether a relative or an individual close to us who can inspire us. This is the deeper meaning of an individual or his relative buying back his land in Eretz Yisrael, i.e. his chelik in Olam Haba, as we're explaining the metaphor, the symbolism. This new understanding of buying back the plot of land gives new appreciation to the wording in the Chumash, which calls the reacquisition of that estate, of the familial estate, Geula, redemption. Geula titnu la'aretz, give redemption to the land. The buying back of the tribal, of the familial estate is called Geula. Uvak galalo hakarovel of his relative will redeem his estate. Calling a seeming legal transaction of rebuying a field, geula, redemption, echoes with meaning that we're dealing with more here than simply buying back a plot of land. We're talking about the promise of geula, greater promises of redemption, when it seems like all hope is lost, when it seems like we have surrendered everything dear. Eretz Yisrael, our position in the community, our dignity, Olam Haba. If need be, Hashem promises we'll get there, but we could take the initiative and get it back ourselves, or be inspired to do this ourselves. And for this reason, you will notice throughout Tanakh, Geula, redeeming a lost field, is always a harbinger of national redemption. In the book of Yirmiyahu, when Yirmiyahu redeems his relative's field, Hanamel's field, there is a promise that the Jewish people will be redeemed from Galus at the time of the Second Temple, the Second Beis Hamikdash. And likewise in the story of Rus, when Boaz redeems his relative's estate, we have the great promise of national Geula, Mashiach. No coincidence that the great national Geula, our destiny, rides on our parsha's recovery of fields. It is more than fields. It is more than contractual transactions going on here. There is a great symbolism of Geula, of making our way back. And hopefully we will have the initiative to do this. But ultimately Hashem promises in Yovel, it will happen. It will happen. Indeed, my friends, detours are not dead ends. Finding the resilience for the long road of spiritual achievement resonates cohesively, consistently, throughout the Shemitah and Yovel promise, which served as the Jewish people's final mitzvah of tshuva, final mitzvah of the second tablets of the remarriage. Now it is so apparent, now it is so clear. May we all have the resilience to pursue this long road and all of the setbacks, and even make lemonade out of our lemons, do great things with these setbacks and rise to the plate to do this. This secret message which we have revealed within the laws of Shemitah and Yovel and Parshas Bahar. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.